Welcome to the Midday for a Friday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and you may have heard, including on this very show yesterday, about the concluding work commissioned for the Pro Arte Quartet Centennial. That's the quartet in residence at the University of Wisconsin. And that work was written by Pierre Jalbert, and he is my guest. It's called, the piece is called Howl, but before we get to that, you know, you just a few minutes ago heard in the news about the problem in Chicago, and that affects you, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, my wife was flying up from Houston through Chicago, so we'll see if she can get here in time for the concert.
Well, good luck with that.
Thanks.
It's certainly one not to be missed, if it's at all possible. Now, you're working in Texas. You've been at Rice for, quite a while now, must be.
For 18 years,
yeah. I was going to say. Close to 20 years as a composer in residence?
On the composition faculty, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And does that mean that as a composer on a faculty that you have time to compose all the time, or are you just caught up with other stuff? But what exactly are you supposed to do?
Like anything else, it's a balance. It's a life balance. Half of your time is spent teaching, and part of your time is spent doing your creative work, and that's expected that you continue your creative work so you can share your experiences of working with all kinds of performers, from chamber music to orchestra to singers, share that experience with your students.
And this piece, Howl, how did that come about? Was this something, you know, I mean, you got a commission, obviously, from the Party Quartet, but there's more to it than that.
Well, they had decided that they wanted to add an instrument to the quartet, and in this case, it was clarinet. And
there's a tradition of that.
Sure. And it's always daunting to try to write a clarinet quintet because you have the Brahms and the Mozart, and nobody can quite top that. But, you know, many of us have tried, try again.
You know, I mean, Brahms thought that way, which he did occasionally. He would never have written his.
Probably, yes.
It's got to stop somewhere.
But in terms of the title, Howl, you know, it was after I started working on the piece that I sort of was drawn back to this, the poem of Allen Ginsberg, and sort of started to notice some similarities in the way I was thinking about this piece and the structure of that poem and the sort of the long lines created in that. And I remember reading a description of the poem saying, and I agreed with it, it's saying it can build to these narrative shrieks, but also can build these litanies to become a kind of litany of praise. And so this really clicked for me. And so in terms of that long line idea, what you hear at the very beginning is the clarinet along with the cello doing these just very few notes, but held for a very long time, and creating this sense of long line. And then underneath it is this rapid pulsation among the other strings, sort of accompanying that idea, and like the poem, it kind of builds to these narrative shrieks of where it really just cries out almost.
Well, let's look at the sequence here before we hear some of your music. The sequence of composition, because you received this commission, and I think there was a presupposition that it was going to be a work for clarinet, and then for a specific clarinetist, Charles Nydick, who was here yesterday.
Right.
And so presumably that writing for a specific person affected the way you composed this piece?
Absolutely. Charlie and I didn't really know each other well. We had met before, but my son is a serious clarinetist and has all of Charlie's recordings, so and I do too, you know. So I certainly knew his playing, and I had heard him before, you know, live when he's come to Houston before. So yeah, I was really excited to write for him, and we communicated as I started the piece, and I said, you know, is there anything that you don't want me to do that I can't do? And he's like, no, feel free to...
he's done it all.
Feel free
now
to do anything, including bass clarinet, which I include in the piece. So he's really adventurous, and he can do anything, basically. So it's a dream for a composer to be able to write for him in the Pro Arte.
And had you read the Ginsberg poem before you came up with the concept for this piece, or was that part of your research for it?
It was part of my research. I knew of it, but I never really delved into it like I did when I sort of noticed or thought about these similarities that I was thinking about in terms of structuring the piece.
Now, here's a piece of yours that has a title that you would not think of right away applying to music: visual,
mm-hmm.
abstract. Doesn't give you a lot to go on, musically speaking. But it's a three-part work, and this came out a few years ago, I guess.
Yeah.
Performed by the Pittsburgh New Music Ensemble, and the second movement, which is what we're going to hear, is called Dome of Heaven, and does that refer to anything more specifically than that?
It stems from my time in Rome. I spent a year at the American Academy in Rome, and one of the things about Rome is all the great churches in Rome and the domes, and this piece was based in particular on actually a very small dome designed from a church designed by Borromini, in which you look up into this dome and you see all of these various geometric shapes, and they get smaller and smaller as the dome goes up to the apex. And to me, it just feels like you're looking into infinity. So the piece, I hope, has a sense of timelessness and to it.
Dome of Heaven from Visual Abstract by Pierre Gilbert. The name of the piece, Dome of Heaven. It's the second of the three pieces in Visual Abstract by my guest today. His name is Pierre Jalbert. He's a composer from, well, originally from what, Northern Vermont?
Right, yeah.
But for many years now, 18 years, been down at Rice University in Texas. And you have pieces that probably have been gestating for years, and you just haven't gotten around to either writing the first note or finishing them. Is that, I suppose a lot of composers have that experience.
Sure. I mean, we're always juggling projects, various projects at the same time. So if you get an idea, you got to write it down right away. Otherwise, between all the projects, you probably goes by the wayside. But
do you ever have any that's like, boy, this is so good for even though I have a deadline on this other thing, I've got to write this thing first?
Usually, I try to concentrate on one piece at a time, and the material will, or the inspiration will come by knowing who I'm writing for and what the ensemble is. So, I've had ideas in the abstract for various different kinds of pieces. If the opportunity doesn't come along, I'll just set it aside and wait for another opportunity.
Carry a lot of Post-its with you to write little sketches on.
Exactly. More like a little sketchbook that and large pieces of paper strewn out throughout the studio, you know, that kind of thing. But mostly, for me, the inspiration comes from knowing who I'm writing for and the ensemble, the kind of instruments I'm writing for.
Now, you're obviously so steeped in music by a wide variety of composers. Can that be kind of a hardship in that you're thinking, when you start to write, wait a minute, that phrase, I think that's in Petrushka or something, you know, and I've got, so I can't use that. I mean, do you become too self-conscious of what others have done?
I think when I was younger, I was more self-conscious about that sort of thing, but you can't worry too much. I mean, music always comes from somewhere. I mean, early Stravinsky is so reminiscent of Rimsky-Korsakov,
sure,
his teacher.
Yeah.
And the same holds true. That's how one starts and how one grows as a composer. And the to me, the ultimate is to try to find your own voice. And of course, we're hopefully always evolving and growing as composers as well.
Your inspirations seem to come from, well, the outdoors, in addition to, you know, we mentioned Rome, of course. So you've written some naturescape pieces too?
Well, I think the inspiration comes from a variety of sources. Sometimes they're just straight ahead abstract music, for instance, a cello sonata or a piano sonata. But in other instances, like the piece you just heard, I had these visual images in mind. Sometimes it comes from a poem, like in Howl. I've written other pieces based on visual imagery. I have an orchestra piece called Fire and Ice, which is in two movements.
It's the name of a restaurant in Vermont.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's coincidental or...
But what the connotations are for each one of those words and the kinds of things, at least for me, that bring on the initial spark for a piece, it's not necessarily about that subject. Same as in Howl, the piece isn't about the poem. It was inspired by the poem.
Sure.
But ultimately, the music is about itself. At least that's the way I like to think about it.
Well, you mentioned, you know, the abstract in particular, or absolute music, and... cello sonata, in fact, and you wrote one in 2007. Was this another instance where you were writing for a specific performer?
Yes, this was a commission from David Finkel in Wuhan, who run the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. And David, of course, was the cellist in the Emerson Quartet. So this was a specific commission for them from a few years ago.
And did you... collaborate with them? I mean, to what extent, I should ask, did you collaborate? You had emails going back and forth about...
Well, we certainly had... we're in contact about the general length of the piece, but they... they again sort of let me do what came to mind at the time, and they were happy to move it forward. Yeah.
The second of the four movements of the sonata is called Rhythmic and Precise.
Yeah, that's the description. The second movement is basically a scherzo movement,
which is maybe a little unconventional. Usually that would be third.
Right.
Okay, well, this is David Finkel in Wuhan, and they're playing that second movement of the cello sonata by Pierre Jalbert. That too kind of goes into the infinite.
Yes, the end yes.
Second movement of the cello sonata by my guest today, Pierre Jalbert, and his piece Howl, written for clarinetist Charles Nydick and the Priority Quartet, is going to have its world debut tonight at the Wisconsin Union Theater. That's at 7 o'clock is the pre-concert talk, conversation. And then at 8 o'clock is the concert itself. Ficho, what's the other work on the program? Is it the Mozart? It's the Mozart clarinet quintet.
Mm-hmm.
So quite a wonderful set of clarinet pieces there. And then that concert will be repeated Sunday afternoon, 12:30 at the Chazen. And all of that is the grand finale of the 100th anniversary celebration of the Pro Arte Quartet. And this is the sixth and last of the commissioned works. That's really quite an undertaking. Were you at all surprised when you got the call saying we'd like for you to compose something?
Yeah, a little bit. And I think we certainly, when we talked about what kind of piece it would be, I think we had talked about it could be either a string quartet or a clarinet quintet. And I think the quartet was really wanted to work with Charlie, and yeah. I sort of jumped at the chance to do a clarinet quintet because you don't get that opportunity very often. So yeah, I was thrilled, and I was really excited to have the opportunity to write one.
Well, I'm sure it'll all work out nicely tonight, including I'm trusting that your wife will be able to get through the problem.
I hope. We'll see.
At O'Hare there and get to experience that world premiere with you. Pierre Gelbert, pleasure having you on the midday today.
Thank you so much.